No, come on. The Chinese markets are tanking. United Airlines was grounded. And then the New York Stock Exchange just stops? You're making this up, right? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, the 8th of July. Good as always to have you along for the ride, everybody. The New York Stock Exchange hums along with what is usually boring regularity. Yes, there are hiccups every now and then, a flash crash or two, which bring on the requisite agita. Rarely, if ever, though, does the big board just stop. Flatline. Which is why 11:32 this morning was so surprising. A computer glitch, we're told, an internal error, not repeat, not a hack, brought all floor trading at the NYSE to a halt. Floor trading being the key word there. It was a very long 3 hours and 38 minutes before things were up and running again. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has been on the story all day long from our bureau in New York. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Kai.
All right, so this was jarring, I think you can fairly say, right? Lots
sure.
of Twitter, lots of CNBC, lots of stuff going on. Catch is, though, things were still traded, just not on the New York Stock Exchange, right? Explain how that works.
Yeah, well, the NYSE, it's big and famous, and it's a thing. There's an actual physical trading floor, not just a big room full of servers. So it gets lots of attention. But, you know, as we say sometimes on Marketplace, it's not the only game in town. There are 11 exchanges, as you know. So not to mention dozens of private trading venues, which we won't even get into here. But if one goes down, trades place, just go to one of the other exchanges. I kind of like to say it's basically like having a broken faucet at your house. You usually don't die of thirst. You just go to another sink and you get a drink of water. So later in the show, Kai, you will do the numbers and you will tell us
That's
all
right.
that stocks were bought and sold even when the NYSE was down.
That is correct. There is, in point of fact, actually, and a lot of observers were saying this, some good news in the way this all went down.
Yeah, as we've taken a little more time and processed what's going on, and there's still unanswered questions, but you do have people on Wall Street giving credit to NYSE for seeing a problem and then halting trading before something even worse could happen. So they closed all the open orders, and they got to work fixing the problem. One of the folks I talked to today was Sayana Mustofi at Tab Group, which tracks this kind of stuff.
It's never a good thing to have a system glitch, but it's also a good thing to prevent a snowball effect of system problems.
The NYSE, there are still questions it's going to have to answer as far as what actually did happen. They haven't given a lot of details yet. And also, what is the exchange doing to make sure something like this doesn't happen again? You will also hear more from critics who say that Wall Street is too fast and too complex. But right now, the NYSE at least getting credit for halting trading and losing out on some trading fees while it was down, and then getting the problem fixed in time to at least trade again late in the day and have a market close.
Which brings us to the fact that stock markets are increasingly in this country a business, right? That kind of gets lost in the shuffle here.
Yeah, that is a place where if you're running an exchange, you are making money. The more trades you have, the more money you can make. And so there was a time when NYSE traded 80% of NYSE listed stocks. Now that's just under 23%, according to the Tab Group numbers. The other exchanges, the competition, they would love to get in on more of that business. But publicly, at least, when these things happen, you don't tend to see the leaders of the exchanges really rubbing it in or boasting because they've had glitches of their own and they could have them again.
Right. Mark Garrison in our bureau in New York. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Kai.
Wasn't just the NYSE that had computer trouble today, as you know. United Airlines had a worldwide ground stop this morning because of what it called a connectivity issue. Both United and the New York Stock Exchange and the Wall Street Journal, actually, say their problems weren't hacks or cyber attacks. The Journal's website was down for a bit. The FBI has been in touch with everybody. The clock is ticking on Greece, or still ticking, I suppose, at least as much as it has been going the past 5 years. The deadline for the European Union from Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, actually the other way around, it's for Alexis Tsipras from the European Union, to come up with an acceptable proposal is now Sunday night. There's going to be a meeting of all 28 leaders of EU members then. But in the meanwhile, our Stephen Beard is back in Athens for what may or may not be the last time of this long, long story. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Kai.
I guess the most basic question here is, what's it like? What's the sense?
Well, if you didn't know, the country was on the brink of a major financial upheaval, perhaps crash, you'd never guess it from superficial appearances. People are moving around calmly in the city. You don't see any, you know, serious signs of social stress, certainly no sort of public friction. You don't see fistfights in the street, anything like that. But there are telltale signs of trouble, that's for sure. And the first one, as soon as you get off the plane and get out of the airport, mm-hmm. the subway is completely free. The government has made the whole subway system free because people are strapped for cash right. since the banks are closed. And I guess also to mollify them and pacify them before the anger starts really boiling over.
When you get out and about, once you got to your hotel, you got through the free subway, you went out, I imagine, for a walk, you got something to eat. What's it like in the cafes and bistros?
Well, people are talking to each other. People are eating. My interpreter actually told me a funny story. He said the other day he was walking past a cafe in central Athens and saw two old men arguing ferociously, denouncing each other savagely as they ate from the same bowl of salad. they were sharing a salad. So they argued over the crisis, who was to blame. This argument went on for 5 or 6 minutes. They finished the salad, and then one of them said to the other, okay, same time tomorrow.
Wow. So the question, though, Stephen, is how did they pay the bill, right? Did they take their 66 euro or 60 euros and split the tab?
Well, we don't know that, but as you say, people are limited to 60 euros, $66 a day, which actually does get you quite some way in day-to-day living in the city. And also, of course, because of the very strong sense of social solidarity in this country, the very strong family unit, the very strong circle of friends that people have, it's helped people and is helping people through this crisis now.
Stephen Beard in Athens for us. More to come from him in the days and weeks ahead. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Kai.
Given all that happened today, the NYSE, United, China, and its markets, which we'll get to in just a minute, about the only thing to say about Wall Street right now is this. I will tell you what, it could have been worse. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Okay, China. The stock market tumble over there, plunge, you might fairly say, continues. The benchmark Shanghai Composite Index was off another 5.9% today. Hong Kong markets took a drubbing as well. It's getting so one can't not pay attention and just say, it'll end. Andy Rothman is an investment strategist at Matthews Asia. He is a longtime China watcher, and more importantly, he is on the line. Andy, it's good to talk to you again.
Thanks. Good to be back.
What worries you more, the drop itself in the Chinese markets or the fact that the government is trying so hard to stop the drop?
The latter. It is really kind of dumb and futile. It's not surprising, however, they've intervened like this before. To be honest, what's going to worry me more is if they start intervening in the economy in addition to the stock market.
Talk to me then about the underlying issues that this may represent, because the stock market in any country is not the economy, but there's lots going on over there.
That's right. And you've mentioned this before on your program, and it's still true. And the economy is doing very well. So the Chinese will say, hey, why pick on us? You guys over in the U.S. intervene in your stock market. But of course, when we did that here, we had broad economic problems. And in China, the broad economy is doing quite well. So I hope they're not going to overreact and start pumping more money into the economy as a result of this.
You hope that, but what's your best guess? What's your educated observer's guess?
My assumption is they're not going to go that route because they can see that GDP growth is over 6%, income growth is 8%, retail sales is 10%. They just don't need to do this. I think they panicked, and unfortunately, now they're probably going to have to keep intervening because it's kind of too late to take a hands-off approach.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's been going on in the Chinese economy for a number of years now is that the government is trying with some success to increase domestic consumer spending over there. Does this hurt that?
I don't think it does. And this is why I don't think that a continued decline in the market is going to have a negative impact on the economy. We did not see a wealth effect on the way up, and therefore I don't think we'll see one on the way down. Part of the reason is not many Chinese are actually invested in the market. There are only about 50 million active investors with a population of 1.3 billion. Mm-hmm. And two-thirds of those investors have less than $15,000 in their accounts.
Am I out of line if I say bubble and this was to be expected?
Well, you know, hard to define bubble, of course. We had 6 years before this last rise where the Chinese economy was booming and the stock market was really weak. So to a certain extent, it was catch up. But, you know, in a market where 80% of the turnover is from mom and pop retail investors, it's going to be crazy on a regular basis.
Andy Rothman, investment strategist at Matthews Asia. Andy, thanks very much.
Thanks, Guy.
Two things to point out about what Andy just said. That thing about the average loss in the Chinese markets being $15,000 and that 80% of the turnover comes from mom and pop investors. Both of those things are true. But for those moms and pops, $15,000 is a whole lot of money. The BBC's John Sudworth has that part of the story from Shanghai.
Up 7 flights of stairs in Shanghai's old town. In a small one-room apartment overlooking the narrow alleys and the pungent smells wafting up from below, one family is counting the cost of China's stock market crash that, alongside Greece, of course, has preoccupied the foreign media coverage here for days. Lin Jin Sha lives here with her husband and her 4-year-old son. They invested a significant part of their savings in stocks right before the crash in June, and they've lost the equivalent of around $16,000.
I've lost so much money that I've worked so hard for. Now I'm going to have to save and cut down my spending. We don't earn much. It was all savings from our hard work.
In China, unlike in the European or US markets, individuals make up around 80% of the investors. And that is in part, at least, because the government has been actively encouraging the share-buying frenzy. The hope was that mass share ownership would recapitalize the big cash-strapped companies while at the same time unleashing the spending power of the small consumer, who would, the theory goes, be feeling richer and richer as the markets headed higher. Now the government faces the opposite problem as people's savings are wiped out, and so too is their spending power. Chen Jihui is a tailor, and although his losses can be measured in hundreds of dollars, not thousands, he understands, he says, why the government has felt the need to act.
If everyone lost the same as me, it could add up to a big amount. When I chose to buy the stocks, I didn't think that much. Everyone told me that they would earn me money.
The crash has, of course, hit recent investors the hardest, and those who entered the market a year or so ago are still sitting on a profit. But the array of interventionist measures unleashed by the government are designed to stop prices slipping any further. The problem is, the harder they have to work to mend the investors' tattered confidence, the more people may have cause for panic.
The BBC's John Sudworth in Shanghai. Coming up.
I think it's one of those things where the argument for the product hasn't really been made effectively to the consumer.
Is anybody going to be able to figure out wearables? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's off 261 points today, nearly 1.5%, closed at 17,515. The NASDAQ off 87 points, 1.75%, ended things at 4909. The S&P 500 gave up 34 points, 1.6%, finished at 2046. Not bad when you consider traders basically worked half a day, right? They had 3 hours and 38 minutes off. All right, so what do Wynn Resorts, the casino company, and Yum Brands, the home of Kentucky Fried Chicken, have in common? Both earned more than half their revenue in China last year. As China's stock market rout continues, however, Wynn Resorts down 6%, Yum Brands down 3% today. Not a good day for IT guys. As we told you, the New York Stock Exchange, United Continental, all those problems. United shares down 2.75% today. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. American Indian and Alaska Native youth meet in Washington for the first White House Tribal Youth Gathering. Whip up some potato salad and pull out the gingham. July is National Picnic Month. And Comic-Con gets underway in San Diego. So, what are you wearing? I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryznall. We have in this country a strategic petroleum reserve, which you've probably heard about a couple of times. There's also a strategic grain reserve, a national raisin reserve, too, in point of fact. Also, a national helium reserve. And it's that last one we're going to talk about today because Congress has been asking some questions following a not-so-good audit not too long ago. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is on that story.
Okay, let's just get this over with. Yes, helium is used in balloons, and if you inhale it, you sound like this.
Hi, any special promotions?
That's from a YouTube video of teenagers sucking helium at a fast food drive-thru. But there are so many other uses for helium that might just be a bit more important.
Computer chips and fiber optics are some big uses now. MRIs is a big use.
That's Tim Spezak, a senior advisor at the Bureau of Land Management, which runs our federal helium reserve. The reserve was first dreamed up about 100 years ago for the military. Today, Spezak says private industry uses about half our helium to cool the magnets in MRIs and purify silicon.
It is crucial because we have no alternative.
That's Moses Chan, a professor of physics at Penn State who uses helium in his lab. He says 20 years ago, he paid $2 for a liter of helium. Today's price, $8. Martha Morton is at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. I'll let her tell you what she does.
I am an NMR spectroscopist.
Yeah, basically she works with huge magnets and uses helium to cool them. Morton says helium production isn't keeping up with demand, and ideally,
I would like to see at least some helium reserve just to balance out price spikes.
But Congress has told the Bureau of Land Management to get out of the helium business by 2021, selling what's left in the reserve. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The waters of the Pacific Ocean are unusually warm this summer. It's nice for swimmers. It's promising for those of us out here in California hoping for a big El Nino this year. Really not good for the fisheries industry on the West Coast, though, the Dungeness crab fishery in particular. It's worth close to $300 million a year. It is a delicacy worldwide. But crabs and other shellfish can pick up a nasty biotoxin from the algae that grows in that warm Pacific water. And when you've got crab that you can't eat, you got no need for crabbers to go to work. From KUOW, Ashley Ahern has our story.
Tom Peterson and his wife, Gail, are sitting in their kitchen on a Tuesday morning. Honey, you want a cup of coffee?
Sure, I think my cup's right here on the porch.
Normally, Tom would be out on his crab boat bringing in thousands of dollars worth of Dungeness crab each day. But a few weeks ago, he got some bad news.
I felt like throwing up.
His usual crabbing area along the southern coast of Washington was closed.
Basically, it was that I was sick to my stomach because I have a crew that fishes for me. Right now, they're out of work on unemployment. One of them's trying to make house payments, and the other one's got kids he's trying to raise, and they're just all standing on the sideline now.
We get in Peterson's F-350 and head down to the docks near his house. We're about 40 miles north of the mouth of the Columbia River on the Washington coast.
And these are all my traps here along this building. We got 500 of them sitting here.
Dungeness crab can sell for up to $10 a pound. That can mean more than 20 bucks a crab. And with 500 pots sitting high and dry, Tom Peterson is missing out on a lot of money right now. He's not the only one. The massive bloom of toxic algae in the Pacific has forced managers to close down crabbing in southern Washington and other shellfish harvest areas up and down the West Coast.
Washington scientists are conducting an emergency survey of an unprecedented toxic algae bloom in the Pacific. The bloom is so big, it extends from Southern California to Alaska.
There's a lot of money at stake. In Washington, the Dungeness crab fishery alone is worth more than $60 million a year. Oregon's is roughly the same size, and California's is even more valuable, at close to $200 million annually. So, who's the lucky guy who gets to tell crabbers like Tom Peterson to stop harvesting because toxin levels are high?
My name is Dan Ayers.
Ayers works for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and this summer, he's been busy.
I don't like talking to angry people, but it's much easier to tell them that it's closed, but you're safe, than to explain to people why we didn't close when they'd lost their father or their son or their child because of the ingestion of some dangerous toxins.
Some recent tests showed toxin concentrations 10 times above the safety cutoff in some parts of the southern Washington coast. Ayers knew he had a problem on his hands when he spotted a sea lion having seizures. On the video he took, you can see the animal writhing in pain. Experts believe the sea lion had eaten fish with high levels of the toxic algae.
Well, it was arching its neck back as far back as it could go and going almost straight as a board, and then it curled back into a fetal position and quiver for a bit, and so that cycle just continued to repeat.
The sea lion had to be euthanized. So far, Ayers says there have been no human casualties here. In Washington, Tom Peterson looks out over the eerily quiet harbor near his house. He's been crabbing for 40 years here and says he'll manage to get through this closure. He's paid off his boat, and he saves money every chance he gets because of something a salty old crabber once told him.
You know, when I first started crabbing, I got on with this old sea dog, and he told me, he goes, Tom, he says, you gotta really pursue this, and you got to work hard. He goes, every day you miss is a day you're not going to make up.
State officials from California to Alaska will continue to collect water samples and test crab and shellfish for toxic algae. The blooms usually subside once the weather gets cooler. In Tokeland, Washington, I'm Ashley Ahern for Marketplace.
Ashley's story came to us from the public media collaborative EarthFix. It covers science and the environment. There was a report out today that might be of interest to Apple shareholders and users. Numbers from the market research firm Slice Intelligence, which, to be sure, Apple hasn't commented on or verified at all, seem to show that sales of the Apple Watch are way down from when they went on sale. Marketplace tech host Ben Johnson is here for a bit of tech news, Apple and otherwise. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Kai.
So with those caveats I just mentioned aside, it does appear that the Apple Watch is not all that one thought it might be.
It does appear that way, Kai. I mean, let's look at the different data points that we do have, yeah. Right? One of them is that the company is not giving us a data point on the actual watch sales, which is kind of a departure from the usual. The company usually says, oh, and by the way, we sold, you know, 70 million iPhones this quarter or over the last 2 days. And so that's, I think, sort of telling. We also have a lot of anecdotal evidence. I've talked to people who have said that there is a unusual number of returns coming into Apple stores. So I think that this is looking like a tough sell for the company right now.
Everybody had thought that Apple was going to figure out the whole wearables thing with this watch. What does then this say about wearables as a category? I mean, Fitbit's doing pretty well, right?
Fitbit is doing pretty well, and Fitbit, I think, has a really focused product, right?
It does
very specific things for you, and it is cheap. That's another thing that we get from this MarketWatch report, the suggestion that a lot of these Apple Watch sales are actually the low end of the Apple Watch, which suggests, again, that people just aren't really sold on this yet. They don't want to spend a lot of money on it. So I really think, and I should note too, Kai, that Android smartwatches have also not sold great, and you don't see a lot of them out there. So I think it's one of those things where the argument for the product hasn't really been made effectively.
We're not
to the
there
consumer.
Yet. All right. Let me change gears on you here. Microsoft lays off 7,000, 8,000 people. This is mostly about the phone, right?
It does seem to be that way. A lot of these people are coming from the phone division. You remember that there was a much larger number of folks laid off earlier. This is about Microsoft, I think, kind of refocusing. It's about the larger mission of the company right now, trying to figure out what its core values are. And it bought Nokia's mobile division. It is trying to figure out how to make the Windows phone something that is something people want. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't done very well in that regard. It's actually had long tail success with its tablets. Its Surface tablets are really powerful, and people are actually starting to be convinced that its operating system, which will now be used across different platforms, can be really useful and can be, you know, offer a lot of computing power to the user. So I think the Surface tablets are doing well. You know, after a long period of time, people are saying, oh, this thing can actually be a computer as well as a tablet. Right. And Microsoft needs to figure out how to get people into their phones.
Ben Johnson, the host of Marketplace Tech. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Kai.
This final note on the way out today, just to bring it back home, what with all the global news of late, the Federal Reserve released the minutes of its most recent meeting today. I'm just going to quote them here because Fed minutes are, in fact, some really good reading, I am here to tell you. Here begins the quote. Members saw economic conditions as continuing to approach those consistent with warranting a start to the normalization of the stance of monetary policy, end quote. Or, in other words, interest rate hikes probably before the end of the year. Tell you what, I'm glad it's Friday. What with all the news? Oh, no. It's only Wednesday. Gotta go. The Dow Industrial is off 261 points to nearly 1.5%. The NASDAQ off 87 points, 1.75%. The S&P 500 gave up 34 points, 1.6%. Let's all remember the NYSE was closed for 3 hours and 38 minutes today. Robbie Carman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Jake Gorski, Bill Lance, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Michael Rayfield, and Charlton Thorpe engineered the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We will see y'all tomorrow. And this is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.